satisfy you.
Welcome to Notcast, episode 369.
Do we have a title?
Nope.
I guess that's the title. No.
I'm Saverin.
I'm Shiva.
And Fuzz has a cold, so we've swapped it out, and so instead of it just being Fuzz and I, it is now Shiva and I.
Whole tag team.
Yep. We are sitting inside tonight, though there is still some hookah noise. That'll be fine. It's a well-ventilated room. And it's been a couple weeks. We've survived our Thanksgiving. I'm sure we both did a lot of stuff, because I know Panther and I, holy crap, we drove over 118 miles on our Thanksgiving. Christ. How many Thanksgivings did you do, Shiva?
Two.
Two?
Mm-hmm. I cooked a full meal here. We had Sarah's folks over for lunch. Then after, packing everything up, we went up to Noxichews and had the big Friendsgiving that goes on every year. So, ate dinner up there, at least a light dinner, because we had a big lunch. But there was still all the usual socializing that went on. Yeah, that was a very busy day. And it didn't help that I did something to my knee the day before, so that I tweaked a tendon or something, so all day on Thursday, when I have to be up and walking, my knee is screaming, but, it's like, I can't stop. I need to, actually cook, because I've got not one, but two different engagements that I've now promised.
Oh, my.
It's like, well, fuck. But took a whole bunch of ibuprofen, and it was a lot better the next day, and then it recovered completely. Then, let's see, Sunday, so 2 days after that malarkey, I'm back over at Noxichews picking up stuff, and I also went out and got stuff from my own company Christmas party. And I took a step out their front door, and the dog that was visiting them barreled out past me. So everybody else went out chasing the dog. I'm watching them go, and I step off the porch, miss.
Ooh.
And I've now strained my other ankle, and I've got a big bruises on my legs from hitting the pavement like a sack of potatoes. It's not been a good physical week for me. Things could have gone a lot better. Other than that, it's just been con prep, con prep, con prep, because Fiesta is coming. We're in the within 90 days now. That means that everything is taking off, and that means that busy season is starting for Fiesta.
Yep.
I have to say, being one of the purchasers for Fiesta, and especially I do it for programming, that means that all the weird shit that they want for programming, and I bought everything from foam dice, all kinds of other crap for programming in the past. But they have a very eclectic collection of shit to buy. And so, yeah, I just go on Amazon and go here and just like buy this, buy this, buy this. Buy 20 microphone stands and a whole bunch of this and a whole bunch of that and a couple packs of XLR cables. And yeah, it's like, yep. There's survived. A bill.
Survived that and Cyber Monday, all that fun stuff.
I bought 300 pounds of soap.
Yeah. Well, our stinky furries need it.
300 pounds of clear melt and pour soap.
Hey, that's how
those little bars of soap, yeah, they add up.
Yeah, it's like, oh, they're little 1 ounce bars. Well, there's a lot of furries that show up at Fiesta, so.
We're aiming to make 3,200 bars of soap this year.
Dang.
Yeah.
Well, our Thanksgiving for Panther and I was actually really pleasant. So we woke up and left the house by 8, drove out, met my parents for breakfast at IHOP, had breakfast there, went to Panther's dad and stepmom's place, and just had a pleasant time chatting and hanging out. So we made 7 batches of fudge.
Wow.
And cooked about 6 dozen ginger snaps. So we'd spend a couple of days,
mm-hmm.
like, just doing prep. And it's not like it's hard or intensive work. Just, like, fudge takes time to set. And we only had, like, 4 containers, so we could only do so many pours at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So we made 6 different varieties of fudge. So we had pumpkin spice, peanut butter, mint, butterscotch, caramel butterscotch, and, oh, shoot, and one that I'm forgetting. Basically, all of it turned out super good, and everyone who's tried it so far, which has been a lot of different people, have really loved it. So we basically went over there, shared some fudge, then went over to Panther's mom and stepdad's place, had a light snack there, like a slice of pie, and shared more fudge. Then we went to his dad's sister's, so his aunt's place in Arlington for a couple hours. And watch the Cowboys suck it real bad.
I hear that they did not have a good day.
Yeah, it was pretty pathetic. But, you know, sports, whatever. Then once we got back home, Adam was feeling like we had abandoned him forever.
Clearly.
Well, we were out of the house for 8 hours and he was there by himself. It was the worst.
And he's rarely like...
Yeah, so he was super not happy and very clingy for the next day or two after that. Because he was like, oh God, my thoughts of they're leaving me forever actually came true. After that, Panther went to one of his coworkers and I went over to Fuzz's and Tieran's. But everyone had left and Fuzz went to take a nap, so it ended up being Tieran and I just hanging out, talking, and watching the tail end of Desert Bus for Hope. So, I mean, it was a very pleasant day, and then Black Friday, I didn't leave the house. I stayed home and played video games. I am now past the 250 moon mark in Mario Odyssey, and I am not done yet. I am just now at the Luncheon Kingdom, and I think there's, like, at least 3 more worlds.
I barely had time just because of...
Yeah.
And WoW just had a new X-Pack drop, so I'm playing that.
Yeah, the new WoW
Raid, which means that we're back on Raid.
Gotta get them purples. Everything purple.
Well, it's also spending time with my guildies. Really the reason I do it anymore.
It's the social aspect of gaming. That's like sitting down and playing games solo is a lot less interesting when you normally have a game group to play with. It's like, I could do this, or I can just hang out with my dudes in WoW, or in my case, it's been hanging out with people in Warframe, which is, I'm reaching the end game in that, so it's kind of like, well, what do I do after this point? You know, so it's like finding out what suit you, you know, because I'm getting to the point where I've gotten pretty much all of the frames in the game at this point.
Uh-huh.
And now it's just, like, leveling weapons and grinding towards the harder-to-get stuff. But it's just, you know, it's just a fun little Space Ninja game. It's free-to-play. I've put a whole $100 into it at this point.
Free-to-play games, you know, are... I like them, but I like also you can kind of scale your level of investment in them. I mean, I'm all for paying for content because it helps support the game.
Yeah.
So I just like its scalability. And so long as it's not EA's play to win.
Yeah.
Oh.
So with Warframe, I put in $100 so far, and I've played it, like, I think I have like 400 hours / played on it. So a quarter an hour is not a bad cost.
Oh.
The amount of premium currency you get for the, because it was the $200 pack, but it had a 50% off coupon code.
Uh-huh.
And I still have a little less than half the plat that I got left. And I'm just like buying slots. I never have to sell off a frame if I like it. You know, it's just like I can have this massive collection of shit. I can get all the cosmetic capes I want. You know, like if I want to get into the cosmetics game, like there's stuff that gets real expensive real fast, but I'm still in the process of getting the last of the suits.
So, oh, that was the other thing that we did last Saturday. So I tried to do the whole get Christmas up Thanksgiving weekend because then I don't have to take it down for a whole... If I do it right before Christmas, I gotta take it right down again afterward. And the kittens, so we had the kittens, they were 6 months old or so last Christmas. They're now full-size cats.
Yep.
And last Christmas they didn't mess with the tree too much, but one of the cats decided to sleep all day in the back room. Then we put up everything, and he finally woke up and came in here later on the evening. He's like, oh my God, what is that? And we could not, we had to shut him out of the living room for a couple of days because he kept trying to fuck with the tree. Well, last night they've been getting better and leaving stuff alone more and more. So last night we let him have access to the living room. This morning we wake up and we've got a dog print Christmas stocking that doesn't have anything with it. It's just a decoration. And we found it dragged into the middle of the hallway because it obviously got carried away like a kill and got dragged into the back hallway over the night, last night. It's like, okay, I don't know why you felt an urge to rearrange and drag it through the house, but okay.
Hey, I got Adam.
I'd rather that than glass balls found broken
on
the ground.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you said, oh, you in the morning you found Because you've got a bunch of fancy-looking glass balls.
Actually, all the glass, most of those are plastic or resin. Yeah. We only have a couple glass things on that tree this year. All the glass stuff we didn't put up because of the cats.
Yeah, that's totally understandable. You say, you know, last year and you have one of your biggins, that's Loki, isn't it?
Yep.
Just chilling on the receiver, staring at the tree, wondering, what shall I slap off?
Yeah, so the kittens are now, have grown remarkably. And they are now about 15 and 16 pounds. These are not small kikis.
They're the size of my dog.
Yeah. So they get going and both of them hurtle towards that thing. We actually have it tied to like the table the receiver's on so that if they take out the tree, it would swing a little, but it wouldn't go all the way over. We'd probably find it leaning, but still it is actually tied down. And that's because we don't trust them yet.
Yeah.
But we put up all the outside decorations. We hung up the inside decorations. So that's set for a month. And if we get a real get going, we'll probably take it down like New Year's weekend.
Panther and I don't really do much. We have like a wreath for the door. And I want to go and buy just a string of lights and put them around the little patio fence around the front.
Well, before we bought the house last year, we had a tree. And we had a wreath, but I really didn't have much until we bought the house. I was like, fuck, we've got a house. I want to like actually have lawn ornaments, like decorate our house. So last Christmas we went a little nuts, bought a whole bunch of Christmas shit, built some, and, yeah, we went a little nuts. We haven't added any, but it's like, fuck, we got a house. Let's decorate it Christmassy. So we did.
It looks nice. I mean, it's not over the top and just little bits here and there, and it looks good.
We try not to go too. I've seen some incredible setups.
Well, and like for Panther and I, our Christmases are with our families. So again, we're doing the circuit of Thanksgiving again on Christmas, and then sometimes on New Year's, and sometimes on like Easter.
Christmas will probably just be this household. We might see parents again.
Yeah.
Our big Christmas thing of just cookie getting.
Yeah.
Which is more holiday party. I mean, I still bake. I still do a lot for cookie getting, but it's mostly a get together now, you know, and hang out, not so much, you know.
You still make a lot of cookies.
I do make a lot of cookies.
I am very thankful, though, that Panther's family is cool.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's been nearly 15 years at this point. They kind of need to be.
Yeah.
So get invited to all their family stuff. Show up and everybody's all cool. So something that came up that mm-hmm. we hadn't discussed, because the episode that was released here on like Tuesday the 28th or whatever was recorded prior to Thanksgiving, and I just sat on it. I was lazy, didn't edit it. But there was this thing that came up in the fandom that we didn't get a chance to discuss, at least in the podcast, and that was the whole puphood thing that people discussed briefly and got very up in arms for like a day, and then the horror of reality set in and people focused on that instead. So the gist of it being that people were upset because Anthro Northwest, the one in Seattle, banned puphoods as part of it being a PG convention. And this bothered certain people greatly, and they were making noise about it. So it comes out a little bit after the fact that basically furry cons are kind of verboten in the Northwest. Rainforest really fucked it up, and as such, like, why are they not calling it a furry convention? Well, that's because furry conventions are apparently not very welcome in the Pacific Northwest in Seattle. Like, they definitely need to keep PG because, like, there's this rather infamous photo that came out. It was a dude in a pup hood and a leather vest and a diaper. And that was a photo that got posted around very heavily and probably, no doubt, ended up in the inboxes of a lot of hotels mm-hmm. in the area. Basically, that any time, because there's always going to be douchebags that try to fuck over conventions however they can. And after Rainforest's demise, basically, I'm sure that there were people who were sending around that particular photo to every hotel in the area. It's like, this is what the furries are. This is how they dress. This is what they do to your hotel. And so Anthro Northwest had to basically be like, no, we're cool. We're not going to do that shit. Just wait and see. Give us a chance. So it apparently went real well. They broke the first year attendance record of a new con again, because that just keeps getting broken, which is cool. Prior to that, it was the San Antonio one that mm-hmm. launched here. And so basically we've got people getting very mad about kink wear, fetish wear, being disallowed in the con spaces.
And those in the know also being upset that why would you let this in? This already killed one con. I mean, we need to keep our heads down, especially up in that region of the U.S. And, you know, so there are people fighting on both sides of that.
Yeah, and like Fuzz put out a poll and he retweeted from the podcast account that basically pup hoods and con spaces, yes, no. And surprisingly, the yeses won on the poll that Fuzz put out. And that got nearly 1,000 votes. The angle that I was going from when people were going on Twitter about it was that this whole situation stems from the relationship between the convention and the hotel. It has nothing to do with the con org and whatever kink group that they feel is being excluded.
Like, take Fiesta. We have several members of staff who are into the various kink communities. Everything from pup to pony play to some of the other various kinks that goes on, who in their personal lives are very much for this. But they also have been in discussions with the hotels. They've seen what's happened in other conventions. So, you know, just from the, hey, let's not piss off the con, we've got to limit this. And they personally would love to see it. They would love to participate. They love to do it at con, but they understand that, hey, we can't damage our relationship with our hotel, because if you don't have a venue, it's really hard to have a con.
When it comes to Anthro Northwest, especially, their first year event, the whole region is very wary of furry conventions and furries in hotel spaces. So it's totally reasonable for them to be super CYA.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to conventions and new venues, like, say, Fiesta, we need to put a good foot forward.
Especially Fiesta, because we're holding it in Reunion Tower. The Hyatt Regency around Reunion Tower. Reunion Tower is the big ball. If you ever look at the Dallas skyline, there's a big ball in it. It's a rotating restaurant. It's an observation deck. And that the shaft of that holds it up goes sinks right into the middle of the hotel. The entrance to it will be right in the middle of our main convention space, which means that there's tourists that come in all the time just to go up into the ball and go do tourist things. And so not only will we have all of the usual guests, and we don't have 100% of the hotel this year, we have to deal with all the tourists that comes through to want to go to a very landmark. We're also right by Dealey Plaza, which is where Kennedy was shot, and a whole bunch of historic stuff. So there's a lot of tourism in that area. So first year hotel, and the folks that do Reunion Tower are actually a separate business.
Yeah.
And they actually own the lobby that's around the entrance to the tower, which again is prime traffic space that our con traffic will be going through. So there, you know, we can't impact their tourism. We can't, you know, basically damage a relationship with them. So we not only have to deal with working with the Hyatt, we have to work with this historic landmark that goes right through our con space, which is actually kind of a big deal.
I mean, it's really cool that we have the opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great venue, but we do have to take into account all of these factors whenever we decide what we do allow and what we don't allow. And it has, you know, nothing to do with our personal feelings on the matter, nothing to do with our personal kinks and sub-fandoms and everything else that we're into, and everything to do with not pissing off the venues that we're using. It's been moving venues, if you've never done it as part of hotel staff, is hard. There's negotiation for space. There's figuring out how you're going to use the space whenever you go into a new place. And changing, when we moved from the Crown Plaza to the Intercontinental, our first major move, that was a three-ring circus. Now we've grown almost three times as big. I think we were about 1,400 when we went into the Intercontinental. And now we're we're about 3,500 exiting the Intercontinental. So we've grown substantially. And now instead of moving a 1,200, 1,400 person con. We're moving for 4,000 people. And it just gets more complex. Now, when we signed the contract with the Hyatt, we did so knowing that we're going to be there for years. The idea of losing our space and then having to do a sudden rush to go find a new venue and do this reorganization with much less, if we happen to lose this space after this year, if something goes wrong and we lose the Hyatt, having to do everything that we did this year in a much more compressed timeline is, I mean, astronomically, like, nail-bitingly hard to do.
Oh, yeah. Well, consider also that there was another event locally that had to do exactly that this year, Akon, and they were moving a 35,000-person event, and they suffered for it quite a bit. I mean, and don't take any of this to being like, oh, doom and gloom, you know, fetish gear will destroy us. We're just saying, this is our concerns and why we, Shiva and I, as high-level con organizers, feel this particular way. Like, everyone's focused on, like, their personal comfort level with it. And there are some people that had some legitimate concerns and, like, reasons why they personally were uncomfortable with them or why they were comfortable with them. And there was discussion had on both sides. But the one that ultimately boils down to, I feel, mattering the most is that of the relationship between the convention hotel and the convention organization that is running the event, where you may or may not have the opportunity to wear your pup hood or other fetish gear at. And what I put forth was, like, if it's for a panel and you're going to the panel in the panel space or you're at a room party, cool. But maybe don't when it comes to common space that is not badged to get into.
Yeah, and I'm, as a con organizer, if you're going from, you get dressed in your hotel room and you travel to, say, a room party, fine. It's just be mindful that when you're going down into public spaces to get from one, like, one bank to the elevators, you know, do that and just kind of scoot.
Be considerate.
Yeah, because we have to share.
Yeah, and that's just the biggest thing, is that we're sharing the space with
normies.
With normies, regular-ass people who might find things objectionable, and it doesn't take a lot of complaints for a hotel or a con org to get in hot water with their hotel.
Yeah.
So, that's basically it. You know, whatever floats your anime goat, just be considerate of other people, please.
Yes.
The other thing that was fandom-wise that I thought was pretty cool was that good old Dio Tazdevil put forth a very lengthy Medium article on how white nationalism courts internet nerd culture. I was looking at it and like, should I read this? No, I shouldn't. In terms of like reading it on the show, it's an 18-minute read. It's several thousand words. But basically it goes over and covers how nerd cultures, like furry or anime or anything like that, basically has been infiltrated in a way by white supremacists and Nazi-ass dumbasses and recruiting isolated reactionary dudes into being fucking anime Nazis or Nazi furries.
Mm-hmm.
And it covers a lot. And it's obviously focused primarily on our fandom, on the furry fandom, and how, you know, we need to kick them the fuck out and continue to kick them the fuck out. And it came out actually on same day as two actual mainstream media articles of what the fuck Nazi furries.
Mm-hmm. There, one was what?
One was Newsweek.
Yeah, I was like, holy crap.
Yeah, Newsweek's like, Donald Trump's most unexpected fan, Nazi furries.
And it's never like, mind, it's come up in brony culture too.
Oh, Christ, yeah. So, it's interesting that, A, it's very good that Dio posted this. And actually, I'd really like to have a sit-down interview with her at some point here and be like, hey, let's talk about this. I would like to talk to you about this and thank you for the work you're doing and being the sin eater in a way. She's the central focus and the biggest boogeywoman in the entire...
All right.
Yeah, Dio is watching you, you know. But it is definitely a fandom-wide thing where we need to continue to be like, this is not cool in our spaces, you can all fuck off now. But it's good that we're getting recognized as a fandom for kicking these fuckers to the curb, but also kind of like, oh no, the mainstream media has noticed that there's this issue in our spaces. And yeah, like, the pony fandom has a big problem with it. Like, it has a much larger problem in it per capita, I think, than the furry community does because of ponies' genesis on 4chan and the entire contingent of the remaining, like, basically the remaining user base of /MLP at this point, I would say is probably pretty fashy because there's no moderation to keep poll contained on its board. And, like, I gave up on using the website over a year ago because it just got to the point where it doesn't fucking matter what your thread's about. Some dumbass is going to post some Nazi shit in it and try to derail the thread with their dumbass, you know, memes and pictures of Hitler horse. It's disappointing. And actually, you know, and I've said it before that a big portion of me pulling the plug on my PonyCon was refusing to cater, like, refusing to run an event that would rely on their money. Because everything had been getting closer and closer to the margins, like, razor thin. And basically, like, yes, we can kick all these fuckers out, but then we can't pay our bills.
Yeah.
Because it's hard enough as it is. So it's like, well, pull the fucking plug. Because you can't really downscale events like that. It looks, the optics are terrible. And people are like, oh, well, it's dying anyway. Let's just not go.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole fucking, like, convention optics is just such a complex pain in the ass that you got to deal with. It's like, oh no, this thing has changed. This looks really bad. People don't come, and it's just a spiral of doom. But speaking of conventions, I did finally go to the bank today. So I'd been waiting until we'd also paying off the hotel bill and kind of get all done in one go. So I actually got a call from the hotel today going, hey, we need to finish out our books by the 5th of December, so can you come pay us? And I'm like, I've been trying to get a hold of the bosses. I actually left them a voicemail today and didn't hear back. I am a signer on the account. I can technically go in and cut them the check. I went and did the bank shit today. I got St. Jude their $34,000 cashier's check.
That's such a nice thing to say. I wrote a check to St. Jude for $34,000.
Yeah. So that's in the mail today. I get so much shit in the mail from them. So, like, they send you this, like, hey, it's a Christmas card with a picture of a kid with cancer on the front and the little thing, and give money so that this kid can see Christmas and yada yada. And so they give you, like, pre-stamped, pre-addressed envelopes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like, all right, cool. Slap that shit in there. Mail it off. They're even the security envelope, so it looks, you know, you can't hold it up to the light. So I got that out today, got all the money transferred. So, like, worst fucking case, if Dean and Mary don't get their asses in gear, I can just go do it myself. We've already reviewed the bill.
Mm-hmm.
It's more or less correct. And at this point, I don't really care. You know, it's just like, it's over. I don't have to necessarily, I am staying above zero.
Mm-hmm.
And all the money has gone to St. Jude that is going to St. Jude. So whatever, basically.
And all of your performers and your guests got paid. Oh, yeah. So,
like, the only thing is, like, we've emailed Lauren's agency and we're like, hey, Lauren got gifted all this shit and we want to get it to her. Where should we send it? And haven't heard a thing. So I don't know what the deal is. We did get an email from her agent saying, oh, Lauren had such a fantastic time and we'd be totally happy to send her to you guys again next year. That's great. Not doing it next year, but that's good to know. It is always very nice that when you get that communication from the agent that we're super happy with how it went, they had a good time, and would happily return. Especially considering how much of a pain they were to deal with in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that's finally wrapping up, and it feels good to just put, you know, dot the I's, cross the T's, write the end, put a period on it. I mean, we're still, like, tweeting from the con account occasionally, just retweeting other conventions we're friendly with, but that's about it. So, do you ever watch any anime with Sam?
Rarely, occasionally, but not that often. I've been watching some old school stuff with Saro, but not too terribly much of the new stuff.
Okay, so here's something interesting that is completely unrelated to the previous serious business stuff that we've discussed. There's this anime called Blend S that has been going on, where the The gist of it is that the main character is a 16-year-old girl who wants to get a part-time job to save up money so she can go abroad, and so she gets this job at a cafe that's a theme cafe, where each of the characters there portray a archetype. And for her, she's unintentionally got this super cold, scary look to her.
Mm-hmm.
When she's saying something, it sounds totally normal to her, but it comes across as, like, mean-spirited to other people.
It's a blend S?
Blend-S.
Oh, right. I was just pulling up some images from, like, yeah.
And so, like, the main girl is the, quote, sadistic. Like, she's just like, go have a seat over there, like, I care, you know, stuff like that. And she's saying it normally, but the otaku that come in are like, oh, ooh. You know, they pay money to get told off by the cute girl.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another girl who's tsundere. She's like, oh, well, it's not like I really care if you came back or not. Just sit over here. It's a good spot. Not mm-hmm. that I care, you know. And there's the little sister archetype who's like this 20-year-old chain, like, she's probably a smoker, but she's this 20-year-old hard-drinking gal who's, like, 4'11", so she plays the cutesy little sister archetype. And then there's another character who's the big sister archetype. And then there was the fifth character, who's just introduced in episode 8.
Mm-hmm.
In the intro, this character has existed. Her name is Hikari. And, like, there's... each character has two words associated with them, like their archetype and their true nature. The archetype for Hikari is idol, but the subtitle is just surprise. The reason for this is that Hikari is cross-dressing.
Oh.
Hikari
is
biologically male.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they put female on the resume. Don't know if they're trans or if they're just cross-dressing hardcore. But it's one of those things where it's like, wow, they're not necessarily playing it up too much, but it's one of those things that you're watching it and you're kind of like, it's amusing, but you also are kind of mentally being critical of it at the same time, where it's like, is it just because this person's a crossdresser? Are they trans? Is there going to be any nuance to this? What's Japan's stance on this? I don't know. You know, like, how does the culture of Japan, because yeah, crossdressing and crossdressing cute twinkie Asian boys is super fucking hot, don't get me wrong. This is not a show that's super heavy on, like, the upskirt creeper shots or anything like that, so it's not like, oh, here's upskirt shots of all the main cast, and oh, here's Hikari, and there's a bulge. Oh, whoa, what's this? But I really am interested. I'd be interested in feedback from any of our trans listeners, if they're watching the show and how they would feel about it, because, like, I see it, and I'm like, ah, this is not bad. And so, like, they're not, like, making fun of Hikari. Basically, like, she's out and about, and they, like, are looking for costumes. And so the big sister archetype, who's her in real life, is a doujinshi artist. She's a comic artist. So she's just drawing all these inspirations from her coworkers for her manga and whatever. Mm-hmm. And so she's totally dragging Hikari around. And, like, here, try on this costume, and try on this costume, and try on this costume. Sketch, 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 sketch. But they did do, like, a bathroom gag where, like, Hikari's like, I need to go to the bathroom. And so she's going towards the girl's bathroom, and the character she was like, no, and drags off. It's like, but look at how I'm dressed. Like, no, you must go to the men's bathroom. And so Hikari runs into the bathroom, and couple of dudes walk out, like, very confused, and it's like, ugh, I don't know. You know, it'd be easier for Hikari if she went to the bathroom that conformed with the clothing she was wearing, possibly. Mm-hmm. Just saying. And that's the thing, it's like, I wouldn't say the show's a, quote, problematic fave or anything, but it is one of those things where it's like, I don't have the perspective to know how other people feel on it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a cute show, and they're not focusing on, oh, Hikari's super fucking weird. Look at this. She's a cross-dresser. No, she's main cast same as everybody else. But it is funny. Like, they do play up the fact that, you know, they have a female voice actress for Hikari. And except when she gets very flustered, she very much sounds more masculine. Because it's sort of revealed that her parents own a farm. And if she doesn't make it being an idol and living in the city, she has to inherit the farm, and she doesn't like bugs or pigs. She like, cute pigs are okay, but regular pigs are gross.
Mm.
So,
yeah,
it's a cute show.
Now I'm kind of curious about this.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, it's a funny, cute show on Crunchyroll, but it just has this one element that makes me raise an eyebrow, and I'm really curious to get other people's feedback on how they would feel about that.
I'll have asked Siam if he's got it, and then you to spin.
Because, yeah, it's really cute and airing this season, and it's only got a few more episodes left, about end of the month. The other show that is top of the list for season anime-wise is the Ancient Magus' Bride.
Oh yeah, Siam's got that downloaded for me. It's something when I saw the like some of the preview stuff that came out, that was like 8 months ago. I was like, "Ooh, that looks really neat," and but it hadn't been released, so I've been waiting to see that.
So it is similarly like 8 episodes in, and it is just a gorgeous show. But it is glacial.
Glacial? A slow moving?
It's super slow, but it's super pretty. And, like, the main focus of the story is the main character, Chie... Not Chie's. Chisei, I
think. Yeah. The gal. The redheaded gal?
The redheaded gal. Basically coming to find meaning in life again. Like, the whole start of it is her basically being this ultra-depressed and willingly selling herself into slavery rather than killing herself.
Because she needed something?
She needed to do something. She was like, that was like her last fucking resort. And she gets purchased for very high price by this ancient magus who people have now termed, he's Bone Daddy. Mm. But it's a very well-illustrated animated series that's telling some pretty dark stories about, like, acceptance of death and finding meaning in one's actions and whatnot, and the main character finding somebody who cares for her.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really visually arresting series.
It looked gorgeous, and that's the number one thing that said, ooh, I want to see that.
Yeah, it's super good. There's a couple other shows that we're watching that are kind of down the list, but we're actually kind of not doing that many this season, which is weird because there's a ton of shows, but not a lot of them we've stuck with. Like, there was they've re-released the Space Battleship Yamato from like 2012 because they're doing a new series and put it up on Crunchyroll. I watched the first episode and like it was just nothing but bad decisions and dumb self-sacrifices, and we were like, this is really stupid by the end of it. The Recovery of the MMO Addict. That's another one.
That's the title of the anime?
Yeah, where it's a romance comedy where the main character is like a 30-something neet. She quit her job and said fuck it and retreated into her shell. And she was playing an MMO where she is playing a male character. In that same game, she meets somebody playing a female character, which is a guy. And through various tribulations, they eventually meet up and they start interacting in real life. But for the first little bit, it's just basically them interacting in the game and realizing that they kind of have feelings for each other, and this is weird, and each of them thinking, like, you know, I'm playing a male character, this other character is probably female. No, they're not, they're a guy. Okay, cool, whatever. And so...
What was it called?
The Recovery of an MMO Addict. But yeah, that's basically... Wow, that's really it. Because Kino's journey wasn't so hot. It's actually kind of sad, because normally we have like a good 6-8 shows, but this season we didn't find a lot that we really wanted to watch that was on Crunchyroll. Whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm. I just asked Siam about both of those, so...
Yeah, they're both really good, and I'm sure that if you take the time to watch it, you'll probably find them enjoyable. Other than that, Panther and I have been watching Orville. It's still really good.
I know. I like that. Granted, okay. I liked what I've seen of Orville much better than the new Star Trek. Granted, I didn't watch that much of the new Star Trek. I've watched a lot more Orville, and I'm actually liking Orville a lot.
Yeah, like, it is Seth MacFarlane's Star Trek fanfic, and he was a big fan of Next Generation.
I can tell that.
And that's totally cool. Like, in the most recent episode, and they've been getting all the various Star Trek people to show up for cameos and whatnot. Oh, I forget her name, but she's the security officer, super strong girl.
Mm-hmm.
Her dad was played by Robert Picardo.
Oh, really? That's his daughter?
Yeah. Well, no. In the show.
Robert Picardo
showed up as a character's dad in the show.
Oh, that's awesome. I love... And he was Doc. He was one of the doctors.
He was the doctor on Voyager. And a lot of the incidental one-off characters that have been, they've worked on Trek shows in the past. So that's really been enjoyable. We're caught up on our Arrowverse shows. We're still waiting on The Expanse. We've watched further into 13 Monkeys, which I'm still not a big fan of, but isn't Panther that likes it.
13 Monkeys, is that like the movie?
Yeah, it's basically a series based on the movie with Bruce Willis from 1996. It's getting 4 seasons total, and it was one of those things where they know that the show is ending before the last season airs, so they have to wrap up all their shit. But a lot of the stuff going on in the story is kind of grimderp.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's going towards some bad shit that I don't think I'm going to like very much. Like, I'm still going to watch a little bit of it with Panther because that's something he wants to do. And, like, we might end up dropping it. We might not.
How many episodes are left?
Well, we purchased the first season, and I think there was 13 in the first season. We're, like, episode 8 or 9. So we'll see what happens. But we also just picked up American Gods season 1.
Yeah, we watched... See, I've read the book I don't know how many times. And so when I started watching it, it's like, well, they didn't do that in the books. I like that interpretation. Huh. And so I'm going through critiquing it from the books. And same with Siam. We've read the book. We've listened to the audiobook a number of times. But Sarah had never done any of that. So he came into that from the get-go. So it's all unfolding new for him. So it's harder for me and Siam, but Sarah's got that, isn't prejudging it the way I do. I do love how they cast Shadow and Wednesday.
Yeah.
They were, we only got like, I can't remember if 1 or 2 episodes in, but I like a lot of the casting that they've done so far.
I liked a lot of the interpretation stuff that they've shown so far. I've listened to most of the audiobook because I think it was Fuzz and I on a road trip to a convention. We listened to a good chunk of it, mm-hmm. but we didn't get all the way through. So, and there's probably parts where I passed the fuck out in the passenger seat that I missed. But, like, I remember from the start, you know, it's like, okay, the scenes with Bilquist, the mm-hmm. scenes with Mad Jack or whatever his name is, the leprechaun guy.
Yeah, I love the leprechaun.
So I was like, oh, wow, this is really good. And then, like, when he first meets media...
Mm-hmm.
And that whole scene. But man, some of the visual stuff that they do, like the very openings, like how many gallons of blood are in a Viking? Like a million?
Yeah. Like, I looked at it, like, wow.
That's a lot of blood.
Yeah, there's like gore. It's like, and there's limbs flying through the air. It's like, wow.
One of the hilarious things is like that one particular scene when the Vikings are fighting each other to catch the eye of Odin.
Mm-hmm.
When the arm goes fucking flying. The arm flies out of frame.
Yep.
Like, it was just this unreal visual effect.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like this letterbox scene where the arm basically flies out of the letterbox. It was...
It's kind of stunning.
Yeah, it's very pretty. It's like the opening is just, whoa, what the fuck? And so it's so far so good. But my dad mm-hmm. is a huge fan of Neil Gaiman. Like... He got a copy of American Gods,
mm-hmm.
read it cover to cover, and then proceeded to read every single thing that Neil Gaiman has ever written.
I love the fact that your dad has taken off reading like this. It makes me want to go to, like, Half Price Books, pick up a bunch of the stuff I loved, and say, here. I might do that for Khan, because I know he's dealing, and just say, so your son tells me you've really discovered you like reading. Let me give you some of my favorites to read.
And I was super chuffed because I found my dad a copy of Dragon Song, which was the first Dragon Riders of Pern, a 1978 copy, paperback copy, of Dragon Song, which was not its first paperback iteration.
Have you done Singer and Drums yet?
No.
Okay. When we get done podcasting, so... When I first read my parents' copy, they had the 70s copy. It's a very artistic cover. Almost, it looks like almost something very old English style, almost like it would have come off a manuscript, that style. The cover, as much as anything else, is what made me, I want to read this book.
Oh, I think I may know which one you're talking about. They have the weird, huge wings that are kind of draping down.
Yeah.
Oh, so, yeah. Those were the copies that my library had.
So when my folks split up, my mom dissolved their collection. It's just gone. And I'm like, but
I wanted that. So I started haunting half-price books. And I would find old battered copies. And I keep going back looking for better and better condition copies. I finally completed my set of them. So I've got good condition covers of all of these editions. But that also means I've got a couple of duplicates. So when we get done, let me go fish some of those up. And you can pass them off to your dad. So, because I've got duplicates.
Yeah, like, again, The White Dragon was the third book in the print series? I don't think so.
But because they were the 70s versions, half-price book shtick is it's half-price the cover. Well, in the 70s, you could buy books really cheap for today's prices, and then turn around and, you can get them for 50 cents. So my obsession of finding good versions of these copies was a really cheap obsession to have to indulge in. So, yeah.
Like this particular cover right here, The White Dragon.
Oh, I love that cover.
That was the cover of the paperback version that I found at Goodwill for a quarter that turned me on to her.
Yeah, that's...
I was like, there's a dude riding a white dragon. That looks fucking cool.
And that was another one of the ones that really snagged me. I want to read that one because that's a really cool cover. I love all the Wheeling covers.
Yeah. So, my dad is hopefully going down the path of Anne McCaffrey and then later Todd McCaffrey.
Luckily, there's so many books to go through in that 24 series.
24 at this point, I think. So, again, I'm like you said, I'm really glad my dad has turned on to reading. And I've said this a bunch of times, but it's just like, I got my dad started on this. Now, I'm not sure he'll be, like, he wants to see American Gods, but my mom would probably be super no onto watching it with him.
You and I should go to, like, half-price books, like The Mothership.
Yeah.
Off 75. Someday before Conan, does your dad have this? No? Okay. And I'll just spend a couple of bucks and get him some really good old sci-fi and fantasy.
The nice thing also is, like, I found that copy of Dragon Song at the Metrocrest resale off of Trinity Mills and Midway there, and it was 50 cents.
Mm-hmm.
My dad found a trilogy of books. It was like some hardcover trilogy. It was like Margaret Weiss and some other author, not Tracy Hickman. It was not one of the Dragons of. It was another standalone series that they had written with someone else. It's like all three books in the trilogy for a buck a piece. So it's like three bucks.
Yeah, you can. Those half-price books. Hi, Bo. We have doggies interrupt us.
Yes, Bo's like, can I get in your lap? I'm a lap dog.
We had to go and get him weighed for the first time. He broke 60 pounds. He bounces usually between 57 and 59.6 has been his highest.
Aww.
But considering he was supposed to be a good deal heavier.
he's like 20 pounds underweight.
Yeah. And that's
for his age.
For his age and,
Well, I mean, he's not skinny. He's not like skin and bones or nothing.
He's just thin.
He's just small.
Yeah. So he actually broke 60 pounds.
Because Princess, she was fucking huge. But...
Yeah. And Sheppies tend to be rather thick dogs, but
yeah,
he's not.
He is all lanky.
He is all lanky and he is a skinny boy.
Yep. Careful, boy. Don't...
Don't pause the podcast.
So our friend brought over Kyrwin Spade. And I smelled like Adam, so I had the smell of three different dogs when I came over, and Bo is just like, oh my god, you smell so interesting, hold it still.
Hold still, sniff. And he's actually met Adam now, so now he knows the dog that this smell belongs to.
Yeah, but now there's two mystery dogs. Ooh.
We went over Thanksgiving, we went over to Noxuchu's, and they have a dog by the name of Gojira that he knew... they used to pup sit him when he was little.
Small.
And Gojira is about his favorite dog in the world. So whenever we go over and we visit them, we don't bring him. When we come back, more than when we go out elsewhere and like see Adam or any other dog, whenever we come back from their house and we've been petting Goji, he's like, oh my God, I smell her. Where is she? And we get the nth degree of sniffing. He is all over us with like this super intense, where have you been? Where is she? So I don't know how much it picks up, but you'll probably hear the clicking of claws.
Yes.
On the podcast. And that's
but that's okay.
Bo saying, I'm here.
Bo is like, I'm getting petted. This is fine.
He is a good dog.
Yep.
We're just not outside.
10-10 wood cuddle. But we're not outside to throw the ball for him, so he's just like, yo, pay attention to me, come on.
So he comes, he says hi, he goes away.
What else? Is there anything else? So we got a couple emails we can hit up.
The only other thing that I've been doing is Sanderson came out, Brandon Sanderson's latest book, Oathbringer, came out, and it's really good. And that's been kind of eating up my spare time. I got a couple of minutes, instead of playing a game, I've been reading a book. I'm on page, like, it's over 1,000 pages, and there's still like a quarter of the book left to go. It's not a short book, and it's not like the type is huge. It's just that many pages of book. And, oh my god, it is so good. He can't wrap it up in one book. There's got to be another one at least coming, because this is pretty damn epic.
Nice. And actually, I did think of something else that I was wanting to talk about. I've been exploring some new podcasts.
Oh?
Basically, there was something like Dio or somebody I follow on Twitter is like, yo, what are some good leftist podcasts out there?
What was that one that you mentioned that we got a mention on? That we were...
Oh, well, we got mentioned on the last podcast on the left and their Patreon shout-outs. Because they've been going... Because, well, we have the Patreon and I kind of funnel a little bit their way as well, so...
Huh, that's neat.
Yeah, so they list off... They're like, Notcast. Huh.
Is that what they said? Like, huh?
And it's like they had to move on.
Hmm.
Yeah, we did get a mention on that. In terms of, like... Political podcasts are one of those things where it makes me kind of want to go kill some motherfuckers.
Yeah.
Just be like, you know what? Bring out the guillotines. I'm tired of this shit. But there's been some that I've been listening to that are, I tried listening to Abe Lincoln's Top Hat for a little bit,
mm-hmm.
which they're, like, one of the two dudes on it was on fucking Fox News and Red Eye, so he's a bit libertarian, and the other guys, like, they're just very middle-of-the-road... They weren't pro-Trump, but they were kind of anti-Hillary prior to the election, and it just, I just could not stand it. I was just like, no, this sucks. And because it's some fucking bad shit going on right now. But I have found a few shows where I am enjoying it, what I'm listening to. The one that I found, which I'm kind of sad that they're on their own hiatus,
mm-hmm.
Is Trillbilly Workers Party, which are a group of... Appalachian redneck leftists. They're out of Kentucky.
Mm.
And they talk about... they talk to the people in their area and about, what ways rural whites and rural poor folk can benefit from leftist ideologies and, why healthcare is an issue for rural folks and whatnot. And,
well, mostly because a lot of the things that'll help you dig out of your situation... tend to come from the left.
Yeah, but a lot of it's just, them joking around and talking about current events and whatnot. The kind of a thing is, like, you can't really go backlog with a lot of these shows because they talk about events current to the episode that they're recording.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of hard to go back. It's just like, oh, it's like a month ago and they're discussing something that happened. Like, oh, that, well, the Las Vegas shooting, that was ancient times. No, that was like 2 months ago. It's like every fucking day feels like a week.
And what's interesting is people are starting to notice the distraction. Like something important will be going through Congress, and then they pull some social media stunt. That's
oh look, race old Grandpa Pooh Brain has tweeted something about these like racist videos.
Mm-hmm. And oh wait, there's something. And then people are starting to notice that that's a
trend. But Trillbilly Workers Party has been good. Also enjoying, there's Delete Your Account, which they have, the two episodes that I've listened to from theirs, they talked to Unicorn Riot, which is a leftist media collective that's been covering a lot of stuff. They were on the ground in Charlottesville, they were covering some of the protests around police shootings of black men, they were on the ground at the Dakota Access Pipeline protests. Mm-hmm. And now they're covering some actually really heinous shit that's going down right now. It's under the hashtag, like, J20. Basically, during the inauguration, there was a big mass arrest that happened. A bunch of people got arrested.
Mm-hmm.
And the government's trying to go for some felony charge bullshit, collectively trying to charge this entire group of people with collective guilt over the breaking of, like, three windows and the torching of a limo that happened 5 hours after people were arrested. So the government has some really flimsy bullshit going on, and like they even had the storefront owner going, the windows got broken and my insurance covered it. It's not a big deal. But this is basically a important case where the government is trying to criminalize protest in a way. They're on the ground covering that shit in the courtroom. Mm-hmm. And so like this is some shit you probably haven't heard about. But if you look it up on Twitter, they're covering that shit on a daily basis. And it's some real heinous, scary shit.
Because it starts saying precedents. And once you set a precedent, then it becomes harder to overrule.
Oh, you're
going to
protest? It literally is. If you've ever seen the movie Soylent Green, mm-hmm. when the people are riding and there's the garbage trucks going down the street scooping people up and dumping them inside, it's just the cops scooping people up. Kind of the same thing. They haven't turned them into meal cubes yet, but this is some scary-ass shit.
It's trying to hold a group of people accountable for stuff they were already arrested during. Like, they were already in custody. There's no way that they could have been, charged for something when they were already under wraps. And they may not have even broken those windows or whatever.
It doesn't matter if they broke the windows or not. It's just one of those things that the government scooped up this group of people.
And they're trying to mass action them.
Yeah. Then there was another one, episode 74, talking about money bail and how various city governments and how it differs places, how money bail is basically a way where the prison industrial complex is basically coercively getting money out of minority communities, because more often than not, bail is super disproportionately high for black and brown individuals versus that of white folks, and how there are groups working to both help people who are impacted by that, but also fighting within the local communities that are facing this issue on the judicial side to cut that shit out. Because there are certain places where they have money bail is like proportional to income, mm-hmm. and there's other places where it's like, you're looking a little black there, $50,000.
Yeah, good luck coming up with that.
And it is in a lot of places, and it's really fucked up because they go over it in the episode, where a lot of it boils down to the local prosecutor has a for-profit prison in their area. And boy howdy, if they can get people to plea to something and cop some time in jail, that's money.
Some of those for-profit prisons actually have like a quota the local area has to meet.
Yeah.
It's like, hello? That means they have to basically manufacture crimes to meet those quotas, and that's kind of wrong.
And also that same group was talking about how like the criminalization of homelessness,
mm-hmm.
and how that's a big issue, because basically if you're homeless and they can arrest you for sitting down on a street when they've taken all the benches away and they put fucking spikes on the windowsills, where are you supposed to sit?
Mm-hmm.
Look, they picked your ass up.
Well, hell, some of the places where they've set it up so that it's illegal to feed, the homeless.
Yeah.
Whether or not it's a soup kitchen or something else, you cannot give anybody a meal. They claim public health, but it's really more than that.
Like, if I've got something in the car, like, if there's a dude, hungry, please help, I'll give him a fucking meal bar. They'll be, like, thankful, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what do you want them to do? Just not be here. It's a shit situation.
Mm-hmm.
And there is another, like, related thing where it's like it costs like $30,000 a year to maintain a prisoner in this one area, but it only costs them $18,000 a year to give rent assistance to get these homeless people that they're incarcerating into apartments that the city could pay for $12,000 less a year.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to listen to these podcasts and get really angry, you can totally do that.
Yeah.
'Cause it's really just like, look, I'm middle class now. I live in the suburbs, and I'm white as shit, so a lot of this stuff has never impacted me. So it's like, when you get some perspective outside of your bubble, you go, fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Bring on the fully automated luxury gay space communism now. Come on. Bust out the guillotines, and let's get going, you know? Chapo Trap House is fun, though. They're comedy.
Oh.
They're pretty funny. It's, again, still political. Very leftist, but it's generally pretty funny. And the last one that I've picked up and have been listening to is called Season of the Bitch,
mm-hmm.
which is a podcast hosted, run, and produced entirely by a leftist gaggle of women.
Huh.
So it is run by women, produced by women, put forth by women. And if you want to hear perspectives of women, you can totally do that. And it's useful when you are not a woman and would like to know, how do they feel about that? Just like for more perspectives, you know? It really is one of those things where you're opening yourself up to different perspectives of experience and being like, what are these people dealing with that I don't have to deal with myself? So it's been eye-opening and interesting.
So we have this massive program at work that we use to chat between teams, reach out to people in the organization, blah, blah, blah. And there's channels. One of the channels is specifically for, like, women who are in the software industry. And they're like, and sometimes it's just blah, 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 blah. It's just chatter and, oh, here's an interesting article. Then sometimes we'll come up with a look at this bullshit.
Yeah.
And there's suddenly a very much of, like, these motherfuckers.
I mean, shit, look at all the women that have come forth in, as of late, you know, with just all the creepers losing their jobs. Right? Matt Lauer from The Daily Show. Garrison Keillor, I think his name. Prairie Home Companion guy. Al Franken groped some people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all these dudes that have been molesting everybody. You know, lots and lots of women, but some dudes also getting molested, molesting men, too.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much all men, though. And, like, finally getting some comeuppance, right?
Yeah.
You know, Roy Moore and his fucking pedo ass. And he hasn't gotten his comeuppance yet, and I hope so, but
I mean,
I don't trust Alabama to not be a shithole.
There's been a trope in a long time in Hollywood about the casting couch, which is basically you have to spread your legs in order to get a role. That's been a thing that smarmy directors, they usually put it as like the...
The gag.
The gag, but and it's lower end. Then you have big Hollywood producers where, oh no, wait, big boys do this too. It's actually, it's not just a gag and a backhanded comment. No, this is actually a thing.
It's not surprising, but it is a little bit eye-opening at just how widespread it is.
Yeah, it used to be is like only the smarmiest of them do it.
And
it's like, yeah.
There was also, so it was the hashtag MeToo thing, right?
Uh-huh.
There's also the hashtag ChurchToo, which is people talking about abuses in churches specifically, because that's coming to light as well. Because basically the floodgates are fucking open. This shit's been happening for a really long time. And
it's time for it to fucking stop.
Now that people are finally getting the fucking axe for doing it, people are like, yeah, well, actually, this shit happened to me too.
Mm-hmm.
And in the churches as well. Like, me personally, I have never faced any sort of sexual assault. Like, as a dude, that's not super uncommon, but it's not something that I personally have dealt with.
So, for me, mine was mostly in high school. I was, you know, I'm a well-endowed lady, and I got my assets fairly young. So in high school, I got, you know, rude comments by the guys. I got grabbed and groped a couple times. And that was back in the 90s, so it's just kind of like boys being boys, and I didn't say anything about it because, well, I was shy and nerdy and all that. I've gotten catcalled and on the street, not only because of, you know, the fact that I've got tits, but, you know, because I'm fat and all this other stuff. But, you know, it's happened to me, too. And it's not fun. It's embarrassing. And, you know, you just kind of want to shrink into your shell and you learn not to engage. You just kind of head down, pretend it didn't happen, don't react. Hope it doesn't happen again. It sucks. It's always sucked. It hasn't happened to me in recent years, but it has happened to me. It ain't cool.
Yeah. Well, like, when it comes to the church thing, though, when I was younger, one of the elders of my parents' church was a pedo. Like, it didn't come out to light till later in life. But this guy was my Bible captain.
Mm-hmm.
He went on trips with us when we were going to, like, he was the teacher for Bible Bowl, and it was a biblical quiz thing, and it was a competition amongst the various churches, and, like, we got to go to the big quiz bowl in fucking Abilene. So on multiple occasions, I was amongst a group of kids who went with this guy on trips, And it really makes me wonder, how many of my peers was he molesting? Because the thing that sent him to prison the first time, he got 4 years for molesting a kid at Wet n' Wild. And he did his time, got back out, and then promptly exposed himself to like a 10-year-old in Granbury, Texas, said, fuck it, pled guilty, and got sent away for 20 goddamn years. This was last year. And this guy was an elder in my parents' church, and I interacted with him a whole fucking bunch. So I really wonder how many of my peers he molested in the time that I interacted with this guy.
That's scary.
Yeah, and this is super not uncommon. Like, if you want to look through that hashtag and be disturbed, feel free to do so.
Like, I don't even know how they think that this is a good idea, you know?
It really does boil down to people in positions of relative power abusing said power. Like, I'm a pillar of the community. I'm a minister. I'm a judge. I'm a DA. I'm a cop. I can do what I want. And in many cases, these people get away with it for so fucking long because the other people protect them. The people of the church protect them.
Oh, the kid's making it up.
Yeah, they just want attention.
Mm-hmm.
Or more often than not, they turn it around and they put it on the girls or women saying, oh, well, you shouldn't have dressed that way. Oh, you shouldn't have done this. They put the blame, they victim blame, essentially. The really disgusting things that I heard as a dude growing up in the church is like, beware of women who dress in a particular way. They'll cause you to stumble and, you know, have lust in your heart, which for me, I didn't really have lust in my heart for the women of my church, just saying. But it was one of those things where
it's a difference between having lust in your heart and taking action on it.
But it's literally like putting the onus entirely on the women.
Oh, I know.
And it's super fucked up. This happened with my grandparents, my grandfather on my mom's side's church. Turns out the main pastor, preacher dude, was covering up for the youth, the children's teacher being a pedophile. The dude went to prison, church goes, and everything goes to hell, you know? So,
yeah, it's fucked up.
It's fucked up. It's one of those things. Like, the most recent episode of Season of the Bitch was holiday how-to and talking about dealing with asshole family members on Thanksgiving and Christmas and whatnot, and them sharing some of their tales of bullshit and just being like, oh, Jesus, I know exactly what they're talking about. Fuck. You know, those are my new podcasts of the moment. But also there's two other ones, Logged Off with Danica Harrod and Samantha Carter. It's just a chatty show with two women talking about stuff. It's pretty good. I listened to Danica on Waypoint Radio, and so she does this other one with her friend of hers. And then there's also No Cartridge Audio, which is a critical but casual approach to current, past, and future video games 6 times a week, it says. But it's compiled into one big episode and then put out weekly. It's games criticism in a more academic sort of fashion. They talk about one particular thing, or they have a guest that talks about like their favorite game, and then that relates to other stuff. It is not the Giant Bombcast, Giant Beastcast. Let's talk about the video games of the week. Woo!
Mm-hmm.
Which I totally still listen to that. Don't get me wrong. Like, I've got a shitload of podcasts that I listen to. But it's also, it's good to have more critical discussion sometimes in addition to the news of the week. And Jesus Christ, what is Bungie doing? What is EA doing? God damn it.
That EA thing is still like, you motherfucker.
And apparently, in addition to it being super bad in Star Wars, it's also super bad in their UFC fighting game.
Yes, Sarah was listening to like some kind, I don't know who it was. It was some kind of British.
It's probably Jim Sterling.
No, it wasn't. I know Jim's voice. No, it was some other guy basically detailing, and they were blaming a lot of this shit on Overwatch and blah, blah, blah. And he said, well, yeah, that is there, but EA's more heinous crime came from basically being things that when you buy, it's not cosmetic, it's not this, that, and the other thing. This is actually something that you can, well, that also had to do with, like, the loot crate. But yeah. This also, EA's real sin is that you can do this and get things that will help you win.
Yeah, there's statistical upgrades that are of, you know, impactful quality. It's not just, I'm Diva in a fucking Judy Hopps cosplay looking thing, you know?
Yeah, and it's also things like, oh, what was it? It was that you could get things that could also improve you, but it was also how the, you can't trade it, not like, because they started with basically tying into like what trading card games were.
Yeah.
But this is more than just trading cards. Trading cards, you can trade a physical card to somebody else. And once they're in the wild, they can get destroyed, they can get, things happen to physical cards, and you can't, they're not yours. You can, they're not locked to you. You can trade them, and they become an entirely different thing. Whereas with EA and a lot of these other ones, they're things that are tied to accounts. You can't trade XYZ to somebody else for, like, three of something else. They can go and tinker with odds and such in the background after it's already live. Again, there's no tradability. You're stuck with what you get once you roll the dice.
Yeah.
So. Well,
you still can't trade in Hearthstone, I don't think.
No, but they were like Magic and other physical card games.
Yeah.
And,
well, I'm just saying, like, on the side of, like, Blizzard, they still have their sins. With Hearthstone, you can't trade your cards. With EA, you can't trade your cards. It's more like they just fill an big list of inventory, and you have one of X. And you can't do anything with it other than dust it and try to build something else.
Yeah.
Then you can get duplicates, but what sucks also further in EA is you can get duplicates of the star cards you already have. And they just go like, oh, well, you get... It's kind of like in Overwatch when you get a duplicate of an item you already have, you get like a pittance of currency.
Yeah.
Like when Moira came out, I got my free crate of the week for leveling up the first time I played with her, and I got the 500 coin currency as in the loot box, which then pushed me right over 1,000, which then I bought her really sweet fucking, like, glam rock skin.
Haha.
But I don't put any money into Overwatch because I paid, like, I bought the premiere edition or whatever to get the extra skins to start, but I've not put any more money into it.
Yeah.
I mean, technically, I've converted gold out of the WoW economy into BlizzardNet balance. I could buy some crates, but I'm not going to. But yeah, crates in gaming, especially when they have material gains, is real shitty and should not be supported. And EA, like, there was an article, I mean, where because this came into the news that people were, like, looking into loot boxes as gambling, like, their stock dropped, like, 8%, which equates out to like $3 billion of value. Just goes into the wind.
Yep.
I mean, the stock market is all fucking magic numbers. It doesn't really exist.
It's all a lot of speculation.
It's all speculation and wishful thinking. It's only concrete funds when it's in your fucking hands. But basically, it's become a big issue, and people around the world are looking at it like, various people in Hawaii and the EU and Australia going, actually, this is bad.
Yep. And it was the other thing about that podcast or article or whatever he was listening to talked about basically that this is gambling targeted towards children, you know, minors. And it was somewhat a problem with like some of the app games where kids start buying tons and tons of shit. And whether it's currency to play more levels of Candy Crush or whatever, but this is all it's basically gambling pushed towards kids.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, highly illegal. I mean, it's one thing if you're an adult, you're supposed to be able to make your own decisions, but this is targeted towards kids.
Yeah.
That's not cool.
There was a quote from a mom who was like, yeah, my kid had a real problem with this. He was up to the point of trying to like sell off his old games so he could buy more loot boxes. I've got to stop to that. And yeah, it's like this in a lot of games nowadays where, I mean, it was in Shadow of War. It was in fucking the Call of Duty World War II. It was in Black Ops 3. And now it's in UFC. Now it's in Star Wars Battlefront.
Like, and that's a problem.
Yeah, it's become like you're paying 60 plus they want to soak you for everything they fucking can, or you're just going to be at a material disadvantage.
And, you know, back in the day, my ex had a real problem with, like, it was on one of the earlier Japanese MMOs, where basically you would pay for spins on a wheel, and you would spin, and you would get everything from mounts to whatnot and everything, and he spent way too much money.
Yeah.
I won't go into how much, but it's an uncomfortable amount.
At the start of this conversation, I was like, I'm not going to bring this up, but if you bring that up.
Yeah.
Because I know it was an issue, significant issue at the time. I'm an adult. I've got money. I'm still not going to engage with that system.
Well, our issue was that he did it without telling me.
Yeah.
And the figure was up into the four digits.
Yeah.
And that's not cool.
And for me, like, if I'm having fun with a game, like, I don't feel bad if I'm going to buy, like, a game on Steam sale. Like, I picked up Wolfenstein 2.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't finished the first one, but I'll get around to it. It was 50% off. I'll get around to it.
Mm-hmm.
Killing Nazis.
Yeah, and that's cool.
But that was $30. Oh, I picked up Armello. Have you heard about that?
No.
It's a digital board game that came out a little bit ago. It's super furry. Basically, there's four tribes. It's a little Settlers of Catan, kind of a little adventure board game, lots of digital dice throwing. It's really difficult to explain concisely because I've only played, like, I've played the tutorials and I've played three very lengthy matches of it with a friend over local internet with AI. But you can play it online and, like, there's 12 different characters you can play as, and there's each different one has different abilities and different ways that there's like four different ways to win the game, and it's super complex and super furry. It came out a few years ago, and it was again also on sale with all the DLC for like $30, and it looks fun, and I know that there's people listening to this podcast that are like, yo, you should totally get this. Well, now I have it, so if I decide to stream or whatever, we can do some fucking Armello.
That's the thing about buying it. Is it one where everybody has to own it?
Yeah.
And that's the thing about, you go out and like a really, really good board game will run you 60 to 70. But you can plop that down on a table with a whole bunch of other people who don't have this game. You can play with, you know, between 4 to 6 to 8 other people, none of which you have to buy into this game. And then you can all play. But when you got things like that, all however many people have to have bought into that game in order to play.
What's like, back in the day, they had the fucking spawn copies of on StarCraft.
Mm-hmm.
Where like, if you're playing over a LAN, everybody could install it and play over a LAN off of one disc, you know?
Yeah.
Nowadays, I mean, this is designed, it doesn't have local multi. It's all like individual player. And it's peer-to-peer, so each person has to have a copy of the game.
You know, I can see, like, if, say, you bought Armello, and then you decided you wanted to play with four other people, so you buy, like, I don't know, $10 slots. You wanted the ability to play with up to four people at a time, so you got you that comes with the base game, and you buy, like, three more add-on slots, so you can host up to four people at a time, including yourself. That would be great. I kind of draw side eyes on it when you have to drop $30, and then so do the other three people. So now you've basically dropped $120 to play this game, which is a little bit, and you have to do that for every new person that has to join in.
Yeah. I mean, so it's,
it I wish is you could rough. Buy like host spots, you know?
That would be nice. That would be nice. But
so basically,
again,
you're the host, and they basically buy a client or download a client copy, you know?
And when it comes to, like, free-to-play games, again, I'm going to champion Warframe. I'm near in-game. I've gotten pretty much all the frames at this point. I think there's, like, 5 that I don't have or haven't gotten yet.
How many different frames are there?
Like, 30.
Ah.
I've played it a lot. And I put $100 into it. So I had a 50% off coupon, and I bought the $200 platinum package, which is the premium currency, which gives you, like, 4,300 plat. For certain things, it can get real expensive. But if you're just buying, like, character slots, weapon slots, it's not that expensive. And I've played nearly 400 hours of the game.
That's worth it.
I still have about half. I just now went under 2,000 platinum from the 4,300 that I started with. So I'm getting my money's worth there. That's a good free-to-play game.
So you dropped $100. You basically have spent 50 of that.
Yeah.
Equivalent
over
time. Yeah.
400 hours of playtime.
Yeah, that's a good return on investment right there.
And it's fun, because it's like each time you find a new frame with different abilities. Each frame is basically a different class, character class, and they each have four different abilities and different, like, special secondary abilities and whatever. So, yeah, there's a lot of variety, and some of the ones are real exotic. There's one, Titania, which is like the goddess of the forest, and her thing is she can turn into, like, she shrinks down to be like a little pixie and can fly around and slash people and shoot them with her guns while her little razor flies fly around and fuck up dudes too. Like, there's all sorts of, there's like the basic ones that you can get earlier on, and then as you progress through the game, they get the more technical ones. It's a lot of fun. Okay, so we are now past an hour and a half.
We should probably read our two emails.
Yes, we should read our two emails. As always, you can email us, notcast@gmail.com, notcastfoxeffers.com. You can contact us via our Tumblr, notcast.tumblr.com. We are going to be going on hiatus till the first of the year after this episode, so let us know how MFF goes, but it's going to be a little stale by the time we get back to recording. We might do some stuff in between, but probably not, because this is a very busy time of year for everybody, right?
Yep, and I might be on a show or two after the hiatus, but we're coming up into Fiesta season, and that's oh my God.
That's your crunch time.
Yeah, that's, I come home from my day job, and then I go and work on Fiesta stuff.
So, we'll start with an email. Shiva, pick one.
I just closed the app, because I'm a derp. Hold on. All right, I got to do the Tumblr because I cannot read worth a damn.
Okay.
Dear Notcast, in your latest episode, you talked about how shitty working Black Friday was, and as a millennial working at Walmart, I can give you the inside scoop. They had their Black Friday deals start at 6 p.m., but were open all day, so they had me working from 4 p.m. to 1 a.m. managing crowds, and later on working my usual department, the electronics section. Walmart also no longer gives any holiday pay for any holiday, but at least we get a 10% off our next purchase certificate. My question is that off a single item, or is that like you go shopping, drop all this, whatever, and you get 10% off that?
Wow, so. That fucking sucks. So Walmart didn't close for Thanksgiving.
That's awful.
That's fucking terrible. And yeah, 4 p.m. to 1 a.m., that's a 9-hour shift. I mean, hopefully you got your two lunch breaks, because...
Yeah, I saw, like, Target was opening at 6 p.m., and my reaction was, fuck you.
Yeah, well, like, opening, it's on fucking 6 p.m. on Thanksgiving. You're denying these workers the dinner with their family, you motherfuckers. Fuck you to people going out there and perpetuating this bullshit.
My whole thing is, you should, unless it's, like, an emergency and, like, you, I don't know, set your bag of potatoes on fire or whatnot for Thanksgiving, stay away from the fucking stores.
Buy it off of fucking Amazon. Buy it off the net. You know, don't go in and...
Well, even that requires people, but there's always...
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't really shut that down.
There is no ethical consumption under capitalism, but at least try to, like, not... Like, obviously, one individual not going will not tear people away from their families on Thanksgiving dinner, but at least you're not contributing to that. Because when Panther and I were driving home from his aunt's place on Thanksgiving, the fucking parking lots were full, and we were just like, ugh, disgusting.
Don't offer sales. Don't stay open. Like, let people actually have a fucking holiday. And then, okay, yeah, okay, maybe do late night or whatever, but at least, like, let them have through the dinner hour. Let them have, like that with their families before you slam dance them. That's not, it sucks enough to be retail before you have to do that bullshit. Yeah. Especially with no fucking holiday pay.
I mean, shit, when I worked at Toys R Us, we got holiday pay for Black Friday. Because we're needing it, and the store bought us pizza.
Yeah.
And shit. Like, it was, like, the store did their best to make us not walk out on them for Black Friday, you know? And, oh, God. So, I also, earlier today, I had a bunch of bank shit to do we're like, putting a bow on Nightmare Nights. Like, it's almost done.
Yeah.
Got that big-ass check and whatever. And I went, after I mailed it out, I went to Jack in the Box for breakfast, which technically was lunch. It was literally 11:57. I was like, God, I haven't eaten breakfast yet. And I woke up kind of early. And I was like, fuck, I've not eaten. What time is it? Man, they're busy. Oh, shit, it's noon. And they've got their holiday hours. And it just says 24 hours, 24 hours, 24 hours, 24 hours. Like,
really?
What the fuck? Really?
I mean...
You don't give your employees, like, you're going to work 24 hours on fucking New Year's and Christmas and... Thanksgiving? This blows.
I mean, come on, guys. I mean, I can see if you're one of those particular groups, like if you're a Jewish shop and most of your it's Christmas. And most of your workers are also Jewish, like a Jewish deli or one of the Middle Eastern restaurants where it's not a fucking holiday for you. Okay, that's fine. But if you're someone who observes this holiday, let them have their fucking holiday.
I mean, shit, even if you're irreligious, at least, you know, it's a national holiday. Let these, you know, spend some time with your family or your family of choice. And the whole 10% off thing, it's probably after a whole order, but there's limitations. Like, if no alcohol and probably, like, certain high-dollar electronics aren't included. And 10%? That's some weak shit.
Yeah, that's very weak.
So, I'm going to go to this other email. A random fox. I was like, it has their name on the from, but did they sign their name? They did not. Okay, so, this one is relating back to the Puphood thing. Came in, actually, like, the day that Fuzz put it out there. Titled Recent Twitter Poll on November 20th was when it was sent to us. Hello, Notcasters. It's been a while since I've written in. However, I've noticed a new poll posted on the Notcast Twitter asking whether or not Puphood should be allowed in public spaces. Quite frankly, I'm not sure why this is really a question. As far as I've always been concerned, as long as sexually explicit behavior is not being engaged in, the argument that this is BDSM sex gear and is not appropriate to public areas claim is a frightening claim to start making. Just because you're wearing something that can be worn for sexual gratification should not mean that it cannot be worn as a headpiece in venues where the headpieces are allowed. I have a very hard time being able to accept the notion that I cannot wear my pup hood out in public that has never seen an erotic situation, while at the same time it is perfectly acceptable to be seen wearing my fursuit head that everyone has seen shared across Telegram in lewd situations. This sort of double standards towards the headpieces quite frankly makes my head spin. My point being, if you think someone is gross and don't want to touch them, then don't. I'm sure they have people who enjoy what they are doing, while at the same time it is everyone's responsibility to act appropriately in public spaces. However, as long as face-covering headpieces are allowed and a lewd nature is not being broached, I feel like this is just a policy to be exclusionary to keep out the, quote, weird guys. We're all the weird guys, and we need to stick together. Sorry for my longest rant to date. Apologies to the reader. Keep casting those knots and spraying down our ears with your hot, sticky words. Love, a random fox.
I think we covered that earlier on.
Yeah, we covered pretty much the same things. And actually, when it comes to fursuits, it's taken a very long time for fursuits to not largely be seen as those freaky sex carpets that people fuck in, thanks to the CSI episode was, like, now over a decade ago, thankfully.
But it took us a long time, too.
So, like, fursuits have a lot more mainstream because they do have some specific non-kink-related use, and I'm saying that with quotation fingers. Like, they're just costumes that you wear, and whatever you do in them is up to you. Just make sure they're appropriate for the situation. That fursuit wearing boxer shorts, should you go up and hug them? That's up to you. But, you know, it is one of those things where pup hoods are a little bit closer to the obvious side of fetish gear, where fursuits are not necessarily. But again, we've covered this a bit earlier in the episode. But this is from somebody who apparently is a pup hood enthusiast. So, thank you for contributing. And that's it for the emails. We don't get a ton of these anymore, which is why we've decided to just be, you know, flaming leftists and call for the downfall of capitalism because it sucks. So,
mostly it's for appropriate and have some kindness towards your workers who already get paid shit.
Yeah, that too. So, it is now past 10 o'clock here. We are now at an hour 38 before I edit the episode. So, we should probably wrap it up. Thank you guys for listening. If you want to support the show, we have our Patreon, patreon.com/notcast.
We have a Tumblr for if you want to send us quick asks and don't feel like writing an email, or even just anonymous, and that is, like everything else, notcast@tumblr.com. Well,
Tumblr, Notcast. We're on Twitter. You can find me on Twitter at Savern Drake.
And I'm on Twitter as Chimera, K-H-Y-M-A-E-R-A. You could also find me on Telegram underneath the same handle. We both hang out in the Notcast chat.
Yep. I need to update the invitation code for that. Apparently it went dead. We had somebody contact us and be like, yo, code, the links are dead, which is just a simple fix. I have to cycle them from time to time because occasionally once the code's been out there long enough, random dudes with Cyrillic names show up and start, like, posting dick pics, then I have to kick them out and change the invite code. Because that's not what this room is for. 2D and porn only, you dummies.
Yeah, there is a fair bit of porn that comes through the Notcast chat, but there's also a lot of chatter. It's actually halfway decent social space, too.
Yeah.
It's very active.
I had these pieces today that were done by Pudge Muffin, I think the artist's name. It was like this giraffe girl. And like she's like this very interesting way of securing her suit.
Mm-hmm.
Like with a butt plug. It was very weird. It was cute, but it's one of those things where this guy has been doing like pony stuff for a mm-hmm. long time. Then he's like sexy anthros. And now he's like, all right, fine. Sexy anthro ponies. And now he's like, all right, fine. I'm just going to go full furry. About fucking time, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, please continue.
Yeah, that's one thing about if you want a very large, copious, and very wide variety of adult stuff. Plus, there's a lot of humor that comes through there. Our backlog of imagery is quite broad these days. Yeah,
let's see. Let's, damn it.
So, and when the days of Zootopia trains start a-chugging,
yep.
There's a lot of Judy porn that comes through.
So, at this point, shared media...
is a lot.
Does it list the number? Damn it. Like, there's so much that the phone is just like, nah.
Our shared media is just shy of 30,000.
Jesus Christ. So
yeah.
there's a lot of furry porn in there, guys.
And actually, not a lot of repeats. There's some repeats, but not a ton.
And Rahata is a good source of a lot of it. And I contribute it. I'm like, I'm going to find some girls for those, because like, most everybody else is like, just dicks.
Yeah, it's dicks all the way down.
Which is totally fine. Just, you know, let's have some variety. I'll include updated links in the show notes.
Okay.
So, on that note...
good night.
And Merry Ifmas.
And Happy Nude Deer.
Yeah.
Bye.